The Daily Buzz is made possible with support from Studio Movie Grill, opening hearts and minds one story at a time. A trip to SMG is unlike any other entertainment experience. Whether you come early or stay late, we'll set the mood for a great night to socialize and connect with an immersive movie-going experience. And independent filmmakers, you can four-wall your film or find a home at the many film festivals they host in their 30 locations across the country. And Onward, a search-driven brand experience agency. In today's heads-down society, people crave relevance, emotional connection, and honest information. Our pioneering search-first process delivers the credible insights for informed marketing communications.
You're listening to The Daily Buzz on KCPW.org, MovieCityNews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. My name is Minji Chang, and we are on location in Park City, Utah at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival. We're coming to you from Slam Dance headquarters on historic Main Street, interviewing some of this year's most important and exciting voices in the independent film world. Joining me this morning are my co-hosts John Wildman and Lancia Wan. Today we speak with the godmother of virtual reality, Noni de la Peña, and the creative team behind the underground virtual reality experience, Battle Scar, in a special segment with guest host Kim Voynar. We also speak with Bing Liu, winner of the Special Jury Award for Breakthrough Filmmaking for his film Minding the Gap. And the Daily Buzz crew takes to the red carpet for The Tale to speak with Jason Ritter, Common, and Jennifer Fox.
Welcome back to The Daily Buzz. My name is John Wildman. I am here with my co-host, Kim Voynar. And oftentimes on The Daily Buzz, we celebrate and investigate virtual reality, which not a lot of shows do, but we are happy to do that. And we are going to do a little section on VR right now. We have with us Nico Casavacchia and Martin Allais and Noni de la Peña. So, Kim, why don't you lead us off with this one?
Cool. Hi, guys. Thanks for being on the show. I want to start out with the gentleman from Battle Scar, and then Noni will get into you in just a second, if that's cool. I'd like to start out by giving you guys an opportunity to tell our audience a little bit about Battle Scar and what it is from the perspective maybe of an audience who hasn't experienced VR before.
Well, yeah, we pitch Battle Scar the same way we pitch our films, or traditional linear films. Battle Scar is a coming-of-age drama in VR that follows a year in the life of Lupe, who's a Puerto Rican-American kid living in the punk rock scene of the Lower East Side, New York, in the late 1970s.
And it was based on an actual written journal, right?
Yes, but it's fiction. It's based on a script.
Okay, a fictional journal, right.
Yeah, we explore the era and research about it, but it's a fiction piece, yes.
Yeah, going through the journal of her in the experience, you start reviving her memories of that time. And that means, like, knowing Devi and trying to form a band called Battlescar and hearing music from the era and being in the streets of New York of that time, subway, and trying to get there. Time machine.
Right. And so how did you approach that differently, making this as an immersive experience in VR and an interactive experience in VR than you would have if you were approaching the same subject matter in a flatty?
That's a good question. I mean, As you know, VR is still very new, so you have to get inspiration from a lot of different places. We were looking into theater. It's about like having the whole space for you, pretty much 180. I mean, like, you don't have a frame. So we play with light, we play with sound to make the viewer go where we want him to go. But it's a little bit of exploration at this time.
So you're using some spatial audio techniques in there to guide the viewer around the experience,
yes,
as well as some interactivity.
Yes. I mean, the piece is not interactive. It's on rails. So basically people get on the headset and they experience the whole thing as we laid it out in front of them. But we are using space and we're using graphic design and animation and immersive environments to tell the story. So that's the difference with what we would do in them.
Bringing a lot more ingredients to the table, so
for
to speak,
sure.
And then putting the
and
viewer kind of in the middle of the soup pot.
And using different strategies to, you know, create meaning and guide attention, for sure.
Excellent. Let's pop over to Noni quickly. Hi, Noni.
Hi.
Thanks for being
Boy,
here.
I can't wait to see the piece. Sounds great.
Come today.
So for our listeners who don't know, Noni de la Peña is the godmother of VR. She had a piece, Hunger in L.A., here at Sundance in 2012. Noni, welcome to the show. Can you tell us, just give us a kind of an overview of what you see as the VR space in 2018 here at Sundance compared to 2012 when you started out here?
Well, in 2012, I was the first VR piece ever at Sundance, and I crazily wanted to do full walk around, and there was no gear available for that except for the gear that we came with, included like 22 motion tracking cameras and a headset, kind of notoriously now built by Palmer Luckey, who was at that point crashed in my hotel room driving the truck back for us. He was the lab intern for USC. And essentially, right, a lab tech. And until 9 months later, we started the Oculus Rift, right? And then things started blowing up 2.5 years later after Facebook bought it for $2 billion. But I think when we first showed up, people didn't know what to make of what we were doing. But very quickly, the word of mouth led to like 4-hour wait lines. And there were only three of us, so people would beg us to stay open. And we were working like 13-hour days, just the three of us, just, you know, it was like a circus ride. But people were coming out of it crying, weeping, like intensely moved. And so whatever the experiment was, the attempt to try to push this storytelling format into a volumetric way, obviously was successful enough to not only for myself continue down this journey, but also to inspire a lot of other artists. I know you probably know Chris Melk did Hunger in L.A., and that started his career. Alejandro González Iñárritu, whose piece Carne Arena has been sold out at LACMA, and I was lucky enough to work with Alejandro on that, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's been an incredible ride.
It's been quite a journey. And I understand now that you have some involvement with Mozilla, who have been kind of leading the way with open source development of VR. They have a couple of grants open right now, partnering with the Science Museum and another one involving their A-frame technology. Can you talk a little bit about Mozilla and how you feel about open source?
Well, we have been able to, with Mozilla, do some really groundbreaking tech where now you can launch fully volumetric in the browser with A-frame. And that's what we're going to demo tomorrow at our activation. So we don't have to download. It skips a lot of the game engine encumbrances for launch. And literally we can send you a link and you'll be able to go straight into a volumetric walk around experience. And that kind of democratization of the medium is just super exciting. It means so many storytellers now are going to have the tools to tell their own experiences, and you know, and it becomes almost like a volumetric YouTube.
And that's the accessibility for storytellers is important because, as we know, as content creators in this space, all of us getting content funded in the VR space can be a challenge. But if you can maybe make it more open source and accessible for people, then it makes it easier for people to develop without a budget, maybe. How did you guys get this project funded? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. It was a long journey. We started in an incubator, Kaleidoscope Incubator, who's the first kind of like VR family that we ever had. Then we had a little bit of exposure out of that and you know, showing the piece in prototyping phase. And then after that, we met Arnaud Collinart from Atlas V, who's a producer behind Notes on Blindness and Spheres, playing right now in Eliza Magnitt's piece, playing this year in Sundance as well. He's a very savvy VR producer, and he has connections with Arte in France. So Arte is mainly or main funding source, which is a blessing because we don't have to think too much about revenue. We don't have to think about too much about you know, how to make this profitable. We're free to explore the language, and they're very interesting people too. They give great notes.
Yeah, and we also have the National Commission of Cinematography in France, who is also like supporting us.
And
they give us a grant for writing the piece. And now they are like going to fund the first phase.
So it was interesting that you mentioned that content creators don't have to worry about making it profitable. One of the things that we've been hearing a lot in the VR industry generally is how do we make content profitable? How do we monetize the space? How do we make it accessible for consumers in the way that movies are accessible to consumers? Nani, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, as I said, we're excited to launch Reach, the platform that hopefully will make the accessibility piece come a lot closer for most of us using this new code that we were able to, you know, crack for volumetric. So I think that once you get to that, then you can start thinking about, is there advertising dollars? How does a content creator perhaps even actually charge a few bucks for people to come and watch something? I mean, we start to open up all kinds of different monetization models by creating these open distribution platforms. And so then we get, you know, to the situation where it gets down to the artists There's no wall between the artist and the distribution, and I think that's a super exciting Mozilla emblematic. We both have the same ideas on how to make this work. And I'm also launching tomorrow a fun piece on that platform called Mother Nature, and it's basically what's the nature of women, and it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek response to. The Google employee who was fired, James Damore, who said that women are biologically predisposed not to be able to do tech jobs. And so So as a leader of a tech company...
Is this the one where they showed like blind code to software engineers and asked them to evaluate the code, or is this different?
He wrote a long manifesto that was published leaked to the press eventually, and he was fired. And he's now suing Google for discrimination against white guys. And so he wrote this kind of amazing line, and now we're responding to that tomorrow. We're offering everyone to come in, and they'll be filmed on a green screen talking about women they know, what they've done in using tech and VR, hopefully, and other formats like that. And then we'll drop them into the volumetric platform in these incredible, beautiful volumetric nature environments provided to us by X-Res that lets you respond in a positive way to this kind of crazy ideas.
And I know, let's wrap up with our gentleman from Battlescar here. I'd like to hear if you could... what the response has been from audience that has been coming to see Battlescar or experience. We shouldn't say see, we should say experience in VR. What's the response been?
It's been amazing, very rewarding to see people connect with some of the experiments we did. It's our first piece. We've been checking some VR, but you know, like for us, it's a discover in many, many ways. And we try to take our knowledge from what we do that is more linear filmmaking into this piece. And we took some risk in terms of rhythm, in terms of change of scale. It's a fast-paced piece instead of, as opposed of like some pieces that you have the time to explore the space. We don't want people to explore the space. We want the people to explore the story. We want the people to give the feeling of like, wow, energy, and then coming back and watch it again. And then like big debates that we have with our producers, like maybe it's too fast. And I was like, no, we want it that way. And it's so awesome that the people actually respond to that. Like, I love the energy. I love how you go from one place to the other and you're taking me into a journey, you know? And like, so that was very cool. I don't know if you have something to add, I think.
No, I think that's it.
All right.
Well, congratulations on getting your piece into Sundance.
Thank you very much.
The energy of VR. Okay, we've been talking to Nico Casavacchia and Martin Olay, the creators of Battlescar, and of course, Nani De La Peña. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
You're listening to The Daily Buzz. My name is John Wildman, and right now we're going to talk about the film Minding the Gap, which is in the U.S. documentary competition at Sundance. We have with us the director, Bing Liu. Bing?
Hi. All right. Glad to be here.
We've actually had him on a couple segments. This is our first filmmaker who somehow managed to just be all over the show.
Snuck in.
All right. Before we start talking about the film, let's have you introduce the film for the folks who have not had a chance to see it.
Yeah, so Minding the Gap is a longitudinal film that follows two of my friends from my hometown where we used to skateboard together a lot and make skate videos, and it tracks our journeys in the present day as we face all sorts of issues with family and fatherhood and violence in the home, and it ends in a place that I was surprised by.
You know, I had this thought as I was preparing for today's show, that how many times a filmmaker is approached by somebody who goes, you know, it's awesome. You know, you should just turn off the cameras because me and my friends, you know, you should just film us because we're great. And, you know, or we're interesting or we're fascinating. And usually the filmmaker goes, yeah, sure. That sounds like a wonderful idea. But this is actually kind of what you did. And it did turn out to be a very cool documentary. So when did that happen? When did you have that thought of like, you know something? This is a film. Or was it different? Did that come later where you started filming and you said, maybe I have a film here?
Well, I mean, growing up, we had, you know, just tons and tons of archival skate video footage to draw from, which included, you know, off the skateboard, like, you know, boyish pranks and just what it feels like to sort of grow up in the Midwest and as a skateboarder, as a young person. But from the beginning, I knew I wanted to explore issues of family, with skateboarders. And when I started working with Cartemquin Films, which does longitudinal character-driven documentaries, that's when I started following two main subjects who were just in my hometown. And the depth that I wanted to go with family was required 5 years of filming. And I couldn't have asked for a better story. So that's sort of what happened.
Well, let's talk about the challenges as a director filming people you know.
Yeah, it's you know, it was. I feel like, especially as the story got deeper and as just some of the things that were popping up in their lives became more challenging. It was like every time I filmed, it was an ethical dilemma. You know, I had the camera in my hand, and you know, they're going through something rough, or you know, I'm in the middle of like a fight or something, and it's like, you know, what do I do as a human being? You know, but there were other times where it felt like we connected in such a vulnerable level that it felt like the camera melted away, and we were just like two souls just trying to reach out and connect.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing that, you know, every documentarian, or I would say so many of them, reach that dilemma on people they don't know, as far as, you know, do I get involved? You know, do I remain an observer in those really complicated moments, those difficult moments? And that ratchets up immeasurably, you know, when we are talking about people you know and friends of yours. And talk about that. Talk about the access and how you manage that with them, you know, and how much they pushed back against it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of tricked them, actually. You know, they were like, so I left Rockford, where we filmed it, to go to Chicago, 2 hours east. And, you know, for a few years, I just did my own thing, went to school, got my career in order. But when I went back and started filming them, they thought I was just coming back to make a skate video. And after a while, you know, they're questioning why I was following them off the skateboard so much, but I kind of just tricked them into just being comfortable with the camera. And I think they needed to talk about a lot of things that they've never talked about before, so they needed therapy, and I was a therapist for them.
Wow, okay. Well, now let's talk about how you found your film, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, because you shoot this footage, and you have the skateboarding footage, and then you have kind of the relationship and the emotional situations, and so you've got to find a balance. You have to find the story, you know, of your film. Talk about that process.
Yeah, that was really difficult. I was cutting along the way, so I think I started putting together an assembly in 2013. You know, I started filming like 2011, 2012, and it just had to sort of keep making reiterations of, I wouldn't call them rough cuts, I'd call them assemblies, to sort of help me and help inform me of what I was going to film the next month or week or even next day. And, you know, eventually I sort of took it as far as I could take it. And that was maybe halfway through last year. And that was when I finally had the funding to get an editor, and we sat down and just carved out an arc. And it was really difficult. I mean, we had to carve out each character's arc to get it standing up. And then I had to sort of weave in my arc last, because that was more of like a glue rather than its own mm-hmm. story. So it was a whirlwind of a process, and a lot of work went into it.
Well, and we don't have a lot of time, but the last thing I really want to have you talk about is the amount of time that it took to make the film. You know, one of the first Sundance films that I did PR for was a film called Trudell by the great Heather Ray, and that film took 13 years to make. She had two children between the time she started the film and completed it. So 5 years' time, you know, as a filmmaker, when a project takes that long, you know, you also start getting feedback from, you know, are you ever really going to finish this? Is what's going to happen? And that's people on the outside. That's not even you in your own head. So talk about that, you know, that amount of time to make a film.
I had a mentor when I started working as a grip when I was 19. And, you know, I had a mentor who told me, you know, if you're going to make a film, like, you have to be willing to dedicate years and years of your life to it. And the note that I took from that is that, you know, you have to really care about this thing that you're doing beyond making a film. And so for me, it wasn't, you know, there was a payoff in terms of doing it that was very, you know, growing for me and very, very therapeutic for me. And so I sort of took that as far as I could too, until I finally got, you know, not so much the answers, but the perspective that I needed. And I'd say that sort of contributed to wrapping the film up more than anything.
Fantastic. Well, again, the title of the film is Minding the Gap, screening in the U.S. Documentary Competition at Sundance. We've been talking with Bing Liu, who's the director. It's great having you here.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
This is Minju Chang for The Daily Buzz. We're here at the press line for The Tale, which is a feature film at Sundance Film Festival competing in the U.S. dramatic category. And it is written and directed by Jennifer Fox, starring Laura Dern, Isabel Nalis, Jason Ritter, Ellen Bernstein, and Common. We were able to catch up with Jennifer Fox, with Common, and with Jason Ritter here on the press line to get a few thoughts on their experiences being part of this film and their journey in bringing it to life.
Hi, Jennifer. Nice to meet you.
Hi. So this is Minju Chang with The Daily Buzz here at the press line for The Tale, and I'm here with...
Jennifer Fox.
How are you doing today?
Fantastic. How could I be bad? I mean, all these great people are around.
And I hear that this film is incredibly powerful and that you mentioned something. I heard you speaking earlier about sexual abuse and the complexities about that. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, first, the film is about memory, and it's about the stories we tell each other to survive. And how in my childhood I coded something in a certain way, which as an adult looks completely different. And in the story, we kind of unpack the changing memory of events, that it's not that I forgot them, that I always remembered them, but I coded them in a very loving way.
That's amazing. And I was just curious to get a little bit of backstory about the film itself. How long have you been working on this project?
Sure.
You know, the birth?
I started writing it about 10 years ago. I was making other films at the time, and we began to cast about 5 years ago. Laura Dern came on the project a year and a half before we had a dime, so she's been this stalwart supporter. She actually helped cast Common and Jason, and it's been amazing.
That's absolutely incredible, and I think that, you know, just the timeliness of all of the conversations going on, how does it feel to have it, you know, at this specific time, at this Sundance 2018 in January, you know, the Women's March is today and everything. How does that feel for you?
Well, it's amazing, and I think you have to realize that all the people, the cast, the crew, the financiers, came on board before this moment happened, and they were making a major leap of faith. And for our film to hit at the middle of this moment is just extraordinary, because it just lifts it up and will be seen by many more people.
Congratulations, Jennifer. I think it's really phenomenal what you've done, and I wish you the best of luck. And do we have any future projects maybe that you can share?
Oh, a million. not for broadcast yet.
Got it. We'll have to sit tight for a little bit. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Jennifer.
This is Minju Chang on the press line with The Tale, and we have actor Jason with us.
What inspired me to be an actor? I mean, there were a couple things. Both my parents were actors, and that was sort of the obvious thing. But I think more than that, people are so weird and fascinating to me, and I often felt like, I mean, not even to be an actor, but I felt like I was constantly sort of studying other people and how they act and how they react, even just to, like, you know, be able to make friends and things like that, you know, and just to sort of assimilate into the social culture. So, and seeing all of the hypocritical things, and that, you know, that we're capable of wildly different, you know, vast differences between our good actions and our bad actions, and we're just so weird, I guess. That is, for me, that was a big part of it. And also, I always felt a little bit like it was too easy for everyone to go, well, I would never do that, I would never be like that. And I always had this belief that we're one step away from any other person. Had we been in that circumstance, who knows? You know, we like to think that there's something internal and solid about who we are and our soul that would keep us. But to me, I want to keep reminding people that maybe there's some of that in there. But you know, once you judge someone and put them in a little box and throw them away, it's easier to sort of dismiss them as opposed to go, oh, how did this all happen? Why is this person think like this? And so, yeah, sometimes I feel like a little lawyer for people.
One more question. What social change do you hope to see through your art?
I hope people, again, have more sort of empathy for each other and less of a desire to make a snap judgment about someone and say something mean to them on Twitter and then that's it. But to engage in conversations and find the common ground that we have and then move forward from that point. I don't know how what I'm doing is going to help do that, but I would love to see that happen.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Nice to meet you. This is Minji with the Daily Buzz. I'm standing here with Common at the press line for The Tale. Common, what does it mean to you to have been part of this project with so many amazing participants in behind and in front of the camera?
Well, I mean, it's incredible to be a part of, like, this story, because this story is from someone who experienced it, and it has a certain resonance that I think is powerful, and it inspires you to go out and say, man, what can I do to be better and help this situation? Because it makes you uncomfortable. And I think that me being able to work with Laura Dern was incredible for me. It inspired me. And I think she's a really obviously talented actress. And Jennifer just was so passionate about this work and being able to tell this story. And also us taking it to the next level and going out and making sure that we educate young ladies on what this is and empower them so that they know that they can go out and speak out against it and speak up when something does happen to them. So it's been a blessing on many levels to be a part of this. I think it only be
okay. Personal. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
And we're wrapping up the Daily Buzz on kcpw.org, moviecitynews.com, and You Offend Me, You Offend My Family. This show is made possible with the support of KCPW and Slamdance Film Festival. Our sponsor, Studio Movie Grill, which is opening hearts and minds one story at a time, and Onward, a search-driven brand experience agency. Additional support is provided by Movie City News, The Market in Park City, Ruby Snap, and City Cakes. Our producer is Lancia Wan.